It's the largest working water wheel in the world. A triumph of Victorian engineering. It was technology built to solve a problem. In 1930, the economist John Maynard Keynes imagined a future. Not of endless labour, but of freedom. He predicted that by now, the decade we're living in, technology would have solved what he called the economic problem. He believed we would be working 15 hours a week.
In 1930, I speculated about the economic possibilities of our grandchildren. When I wrote that little essay, I tried to look beyond the prevailing world depression and ask what compound progress in technique and capital would mean over a century. I suggested that if technical efficiency, what today you deem productivity, were to grow at a little more than 1% per year, and the stock of capital at about 2% per year, then by roughly a century later, countries such as Britain or the United States could be 4 to 8 times richer per head. In that case, the economic problem of sheer subsistence would be largely mastered, and the central question would shift from earning a living to using our freedom wisely and agreeably.
Nearly a century later, we've arrived at his deadline, but the 15-hour week remains a ghost. Look at Douglas at 5:30 in the afternoon. The traffic on Richmond Hill. The blue glow of laptops in bedroom windows in Onchan. We're not working less, we're working more. And now, artificial intelligence has arrived to save us again.
The potential positive path is so good that it will force us to rethink how should we use our time.
So here's the question. Are we on the verge of being set free? Or are we building a faster engine for the same journey? On paper, this looks like an economic miracle. Global forecasts suggest artificial intelligence could add trillions to the world's economy, boost productivity, accelerate growth. Here on the Isle of Man, that ambition is clear. The government's Activate AI program aims to drive economic expansion, with a target of contributing towards a 10% increase in GDP by 2030.
If we don't adopt AI, we won't be able to compete on the global stage.
Lyle Raxall heads up the digital branch of the Department for Enterprise, which also oversees the newly founded National AI Office.
People will be able to drop their prices as they create more productivity and streamline the way that they deliver. That doesn't necessarily mean that businesses will have a smaller workforce, although it obviously could do. Some businesses will grow and be able to deliver a considerable amount more by using AI to create better productivity. With GDP, again, if we're not adopting it, our businesses will start creating less. As other countries increase their GDP, ours will reduce, and that will cause some issues. Businesses are leading the charge on AI, and they're the people that are going to drive that adoption and drive the increase in GDP. What governments need to do is to create a clear and certain environment for those businesses to operate in. So our immediate priority on the Isle of Man is to make sure that we offer that clarity, we offer that certainty by having really good policies, guidance, regulations in place that are going to support AI and be an attractive place for people to develop it, to use it, and to understand that its place on the Isle of Man's economy. I believe we've done a good amount of AI awareness raising. What we now need to start looking at is AI training. And the question that we're all grappling with globally is, what is it to be AI literate? So if I'm an employer and I want to hire somebody, more and more, we are all now asking, do you understand how to use AI? But what levels are that? How do we prove and how do we all use the same language about what we expect? What's been really interesting to me in the last month is, with the more other jurisdictions we're talking to, and we're actively trying to work with the jurisdictions, both large and small, is that everyone's echoing the journey that I feel that we went on the Isle of Man, feeling we were starting late and looking at other jurisdictions. So we looked at Singapore, who are undeniably one of the world leaders in this space, and thought to ourselves, we're so far behind, we've got to catch up. We now have jurisdictions coming to us and saying, the Isle of Man seem to be doing all the right things and you seem to be so far ahead of us, where we don't actually feel like that ourselves. But it is one of those situations where everyone feels like they are playing catch up. There's very few people who truly feel like they're leading this.
The logic is simple. If we can do more, faster, the economy grows. But history suggests something more complicated.
Jevons paradox is a paradox that was discovered, if you want to use this term, by, I believe, William Jevons in the 1800s. And it was initially about a coal production, but it is something that's coming up recently, or came up recently again and again, when we look at technology and economics over the last, two centuries since then. And that is the seemingly paradoxical observation that if something, a process or a product, becomes more efficient to produce or to deliver, then that might increase the use of this service and this product.
Dr. Fabian Stefani is a researcher and lecturer in AI and work at the University of Oxford.
Back in Jevons' days, it was that coal production became more efficient, and in return, more and more people used technologies or used products that were related to coal, and that increased the demand for coal production.
And how do you think that idea translates into artificial intelligence and modern workplaces?
Well, that is something that is currently a very curious topic of investigation among scholars like me and other fellow economists, for example. And that is, we could assume that artificial intelligence is making us, ideally, more efficient in the things that we do, so we get better in whatever work we do, say it's writing emails or preparing a podcast, a radio episode like this, and that frees up time and less work is being demanded. But that is actually not what we're seeing right now, though I have to say the profession or the researchers that are investigating this have not fully agreed yet whether, you know, we see yet another revival of Jevons' paradox. But it could be that we're actually observing something like that people, again paradoxically, become more efficient with the use of artificial intelligence, but that might lead to more work and not less work. John Maynard Keynes is very famous for this prediction, you know, this kind of imagining the world of his own grandchildren and being freed up from labor. I think predictions like that have aged terrible, so I resist the temptation to make another prediction about the future. But what you could definitely imagine that, so you do definitely see already in certain studies that people do become more efficient, so they could be saving up time. But what history has shown us about all sorts of technologies in the past is that this had not led to something like, let's say, the 30-hour week, right? Which is something that's very commonly discussed these days, particularly about among certain parts of the labor force. We've seen all sorts of technologies. It's the internet, for example, the computers, smartphones, mobile electronic devices, and always it was thought that, okay, this is going to make work so much more efficient that we have more free time, more leisure time, and that is not the case.
Do you think AI is fundamentally different from past technologies, or are we starting to see the same pattern repeat?
I think one aspect that's really at my heart, and that is the in terms of outlook where our research is heading, is also at the forefront of our research agenda, is inequalities. Of course, you know, all of these discussions, all the points that were made should have this disclaimer that different parts of the population are affected differently, and some will naturally, by the work that they do, by the education, the skills that they have, profit from this technology, and others might run the risk of being left behind. And I think that's really important. That's a big important challenge for us as a society, you know, moving away from all these doomsday scenarios that we will all be jobless, which is not going to happen. But the real challenge is, I think, a big mismatch on the labor market of the skills that are needed and the skills that people have. And I think that's a big, big policy challenge.
Raj Chowdhury is a professor of organizational behavior at the London School of Economics.
AI doesn't make us automatically productive. There are two important conditions that need to be met. The first one is that the person using AI needs to have complementary domain knowledge. And the other condition is that we are able to mitigate what we organizational scholars call algorithm aversion.
Algorithm aversion is the idea that many experts, even if they can use AI, won't use it because they're against using the technology for certain tasks.
So this is what I've called the ability aversion paradox. That you need the ability to be productive with AI, but paradoxically, the folks with the highest ability, the experts, they are quite averse to using algorithms in many cases. Every company is excited about AI. Some are running AI pilots. But none of the companies I've spoken to, absolutely none, know how they can scale a small AI pilot to a 10,000-person organization. So I think that productivity that we are speculating will take years, if not decades, to happen.
Do you think that infinite growth on a finite planet are actually compatible with a technology that's moving as fast as AI?
It's not going to be infinite growth. I think, you know, we talked about the internet in similar language because AI also needs complementary resources. So we talked about domain expertise, but if you think about just the production of AI expertise, you're looking at the economics of tokens, which is related to the economics of power plants, which is related to not only the consumption of electricity, but also global warming, and finding land to build these power plants. So it's not that, you know, it's AI is not producing expertise out of thin air. So I think there'll be finite constraints on the resources, especially land, water, and electricity needed to generate the kind of productivity benefits you're talking about. And I fully expect communities and countries to push back on building power plants at scale to fund, to sort of like support data centers. And I know Elon Musk is now talking about building data centers in space, and that might be a good proof of concept. But, you know, again, I think everything I've seen, the constraints on domain knowledge, the aversion from experts, the constraints on land, power, electricity, that these magical productivity numbers will take decades to happen.
In the 19th century, it was coal. Today, it's human effort. If AI makes a task 10 times faster, it doesn't necessarily give us 9/10 of the week back. It may simply create demand for 10 times as much work.
Hi, I'm Brian Gallagher from Lima Logic. Well, in a traditional workday, we've got a mix of kind of high mental focus activities broken up with like lower mental stress work, like writing emails and researching stuff with Google. With AI augmenting and automating a lot of those things out of the way, basically all we're left with are the high mental work tasks. So we're burning up our brain stores a lot faster without a period of recuperation in between. Historically, it seems that companies tend to drive towards just, you know, maximizing profits as opposed to minimizing the level of effort to generate them. I haven't seen anything convincing yet that will not continue to be the case. Yeah, there's discussions around things like UBI and four-day work weeks and things like that that may come about through social pressure. I don't know that the companies themselves would be motivated to do it.
Dan Thomas is an AI consultant. He's also one of the Activate AI partners and is the founder of Architect, a firm specializing in AI and automation.
There are discussions around, you know, could this enable shorter working weeks, more flexible working, all these sort of things. There's also discussion around if the AI is doing a role, where does the salary for that role go? Does it in fact then get distributed out to people who were previously doing that role while they upskill in other areas? And that's one of the things that I know is being looked at a lot. I'm not really seeing businesses talk about that stage yet. Given the general global economy at the minute, there's a lot of tightening of belts and purse strings. And I think a lot of companies aren't ready to look at it from that point of view yet.
And I suppose it's a very tricky decision for the chief executives, the C-suite level, because ultimately they will likely be competing with other firms in a similar industry.
When it started and this stuff was all rolling out initially, it was very much a case of if you could suddenly 10x your work, you would be outperforming your competitors. But now it's been around for so long and it's so accepted that the risk is if you don't up your performance and up your output, you just get left behind compared to the others. And again, with the successor companies, that's the big risk we're seeing with those, that one or two people can start a company that previously might have taken 20 or 30 people to run it. They have very few costs and they can massively outperform. And if your company with 20 or 30 people isn't suddenly producing more content, more output and more value, how do you keep up with that?
Where do you see AI going? Do you see it being a case of the capitalism route trying to pump out more productivity, more work, or do you see it as being, there'll ever be a time where businesses might go, okay, well, actually, we can give everyone Friday off because we'll still maintain current productivity levels?
I would like to see the second one. It's that Star Trek future where everyone's happy, no one needs money and everything is supported. The reality is capitalism seems to be winning globally. And unfortunately, that's a zero-sum race when you've got a couple of people in charge of all the means of production and they're using AI to produce it. Who's going to buy what they're producing? So at some point, there will be some sort of change, whether we as a global society manage to get ahead of that and make some sort of changes so we can prevent it becoming a major issue, or whether it just gets to a stage when we're facing large-scale collapse. I would very much like it to be, as a society, we can get to the first one. I know when we talk to the other partners, that's sort of all our focus. But we're not the billionaires in the world.
It's not liberation as Keynes imagined. On the Isle of Man, that tension is already being felt. Workers in finance, law, administration say AI is helping. But the bar is moving. The output is higher. The pace, faster. Before entering the political sphere, Dr. Alex Allenson worked in medicine as a GP.
The main issues are fatigue, but also burnout. And people talk about burnout. If you're functioning at a very high level, sometimes a stressful level, because as a GP, your worst nightmare is missing a diagnosis, particularly a serious diagnosis of something like cancer. And yet you may get people presenting with quite vague symptoms that may take a while to put together. And so when you're functioning at a very high level, dealing with that, dealing with the emotions of people coming into you as well, that idea of burnout, of becoming worn out, of losing empathy, losing concentration and being fearful of that, can be really quite dramatic and can lead to people ending their careers and leaving the profession early.
What happens to decision-making when someone is mentally fatigued but they're still expected to perform at a high level?
The stress is on them. It then goes on to their families and their colleagues. It's seen as weakness if you say, look, I really do need a day off because I'm feeling sick at the moment. And we know that people will come into work even if they're feeling sick because they know nobody else can fill their shift. And so that sort of attitude, whilst very noble and heroic, can lead to that sense of burnout and complete exhaustion in the end.
Research consistently shows that rest isn't a luxury, it's a requirement. A well-rested mind is more creative, more accurate, more productive. But in an always-on economy, downtime disappears. For nearly a century, we've measured success using a single number.
Gross domestic product.
GDP.
Think of GDP as a giant receipt that shows the total value of everything a country created and sold over a specific period of time. To calculate it, you add up the price of every loaf of bread baked, every smartphone manufactured, every haircut given, even every hour an advocate spends giving advice. If the GDP is higher than it was the year before, it usually means the country's economic engine is running faster, businesses are busy, and more people have jobs. However, while it tells you how much stuff a country is making, it doesn't necessarily show if people are happy or if the environment is being protected. Simply put, it's a scorecard for the size and speed of the nation's marketplace. Do we use AI to maximize output or to reshape how we live? Around the world, some governments are beginning to ask different questions. Not just how much are we producing, but how are we living? How much time do people have? How much stress are they under? What is the quality of life behind the numbers?
With every dramatic change in industrialization, from the original industrialization to computing, electrification, etc., there's always been a change and a trade-off between increased productivity and the increase in the leisure hours worked.
John Webster, chair of the Manx Technology Group.
Worldwide, as a measure of how the take-up of AI, in October 2025, which is not that long ago, there were 6 million bits per minute of AI taken. They're called tokens. It's now 15 billion. So in that short period of time, that illustrates the take-up of AI. Keynes said that we'd eventually all be working 15 hours a week. What Keynes didn't factor in was the fact that the wants of society are infinite. And if you look at the Isle of Man, we haven't got enough tax to pay. So the government is delving into our savings every year to the extent of £100 million, which illustrates the point that we do need more. But also, it's worth noting that when Keynes was talking, the typical hourly week was about 60 hours. We're now down to well under 40. 35 or less is now not uncommon.
Do you think it'll ever get to the point of a 15-hour week?
I think it depends on what people want, and I think it's how we manage AI. For the Isle of Man, I think we've got to make some dramatic policy decisions on how we manage AI, because AI could replace 20% of jobs. Now, do we allow it to unmanage to do that? Or do we say, we're going to take control of AI and ensure that it works for the benefit of the Isle of Man? I don't think there's not much chance of AI becoming a new sector like e-gaming. But there is a real prospect of using AI to make our existing industries more efficient so they can compete more successfully overseas and get what the Isle of Man really needs, which is new money to pay for all the things that we know are required.
The Isle of Man is a biosphere. We pride ourselves on balance, on community, on quality of life. Artificial intelligence doesn't remove that, it amplifies our choices. If a machine can do the work of two people, what happens next? Do we do twice as much? Or do we finally stop? Keynes wasn't wrong about the technology, but he was wrong about us. As 2030 approaches, the question is no longer, can we be more productive, but rather, do we need to be?